On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
We do know, of course, that behind all of this pandemic concern is some concern around what it's all going to mean for hospitals. And because as yet we don't really know how it's going to translate into hospital admissions, you can understand why people are fairly nervous about it all. Phil Nihay is the General Secretary of the INMO and she's with us on the line. Phil, before we talk about the impact on your own members and how burnt out I'm sure they are at this point, you might maybe just give us some backdrop as to what sort of state hospitals are in, even COVID aside right now.
Yeah, thanks, Gavin, and good afternoon. The hospitals are very busy. This time of year, you know, we always are gearing up for a busy period. Our trolley count that we've been counting since, I suppose, for over a decade now, would always be January, in fact, as the worst month. But already this month, we've had more people on trolleys. And the reason we count those is to give an indication of in respect of hospital busyness, because people on trolleys are people who are sick enough to be admitted to hospital, but for whom there are no beds. Mm-hmm. And already this month, we have more, on Friday, we had more people on trolleys than we had for the whole of last December. So our hospitals are busier. Normal elective work is still continuing. And that's in an attempt to keep the system going, COVID and normal healthcare that requires day-to-day admission to hospital. And also then you have people turning up at EDs because they're finding it difficult to get services in the community. And all of that together means that the emergency departments have become very busy, the hospitals are overcrowded, and we're now looking to, I think what everybody is pretty confident is going to be a very, very difficult next 2 weeks and into the remainder of January.
The Trolley Watch figures for last Friday had, I think, 229 people on trolleys in emergency departments and then another 90 in wards. You might just remind us, of course, and the number had been much higher earlier in the week. I don't want to downplay that, but it's still obviously a very high number. You might just remind people who've become almost kind of blind to what that translates into, how that compromises their care, even aside from there being an infectious virus on the rounds.
Yeah, for example, one of the hospitals on Friday, University Hospital Limerick, had 25 people on trolleys throughout its hospital. Now, your normal ward is about 23, 24 people. So that's a full ward of people spread throughout the hospital. We fundamentally disagree with trolleys on wards because that means the staff of that ward have additional patients to look after, but in inappropriate places. Likewise, in ED, in the emergency department, when you have trolleys throughout corridors, there's just simply no way that the care those people need or expect when they're admitted to hospital can be given. It just simply can't happen. So it's a very dangerous situation. It's a very unsafe situation in the normal times. But you put an airborne transmissible virus into the mix and it's absolutely dangerous. And in fact, it is our view that a lot more of elective work should be moved to the private hospitals, and a lot more help should now be on the pitch from the private hospitals to make sure that the public hospitals aren't presented with these dilemmas as to which is the least unsafe.
Sure. The government would tell you, though, that they've got that standing arrangement with the private hospitals that can be invoked, that if there is to be a major surge again in the new year, as we hope there won't be, but which we fear there is, that at least they can always invoke that.
I'm not so sure how far that goes, Gavin, because I was speaking with one of our frontline ICU managers who had to ring a number of private hospitals during Thursday and Friday to seek assistance, and she was refused. So
They turned her down. She needed help to share the burden of ICU, and they said no.
They said no, and they have an admission criteria. Those particular hospitals that I won't name had admission criteria. We've raised that with the HSE. We'll be raising it again with them tomorrow. Because right now, when we say we can invoke assistance from the private hospitals, I think we have to dig a bit deeper and say, what exactly does that mean?
Is the concern then that I suppose that there needs to be some nationally triggered level, or that it needs to have some Department of Health intervention? Because one would assume that if there is a standing arrangement that the private hospitals can share the burden, that it ought to be operable on the ground, that an ICU manager or supervisor like the one you just mentioned should be able to ring the nearest one and say, guys, we have a problem and we need your help.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think that if the modelling that is projected, and we're going to look at having over 400 people in ICU, and I hope that doesn't happen. Like, we just do not have capacity. It simply isn't there. And critical care beds outside of intensive care environments, again, they're not staffed. You're talking about theatre recovery rooms. You're talking about other locations that are not, you know, staffed with critical care trained nurses. And, you know, that's all right for a day or two. But that being the long-term plan simply is too dangerous. It's way too dangerous. And it's actually really, really worrying for the people we represent. And that's why I think it is really important now that we know next week is going to be really difficult, but we believe strongly that very serious decisions have to be made and made in respect of exactly where these beds are going to come from.
So you mean the decisions, not just societal restrictions, but just decisions about where exactly we're going to be able to treat all these people if we do have the numbers we fear?
And I think the numbers on trolleys, the indication is that people are attending their emergency department in high numbers. People are very sick. It is the experience of nurses and midwives that the length of stay in hospital, those who have COVID, is longer. So they're sicker and they're in hospital for longer. So the beds are not being freed up as quickly as at other times they might have been.
I know that the HSE counts these figures in a slightly different way to you guys, but I've just pulled up the HSE's latest update this morning. At 8 o'clock this morning in the country's public hospitals, there were 179 people on trolleys in emergency departments. 88 of those had been there for over 9 hours. They had literally spent the entire night there. 28 of those 179 were actually there for 24 hours. They'd literally been there on a trolley in an emergency department for over a full day. They were there before 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. They were still there at 8 o'clock on Sunday morning. I presume behind all of this as well, Phil, and it's worth restating this for people who've forgotten, is that there just isn't adequate staffing to deal with all these patients. That I presume hospitals are only ever staffed or equipped to deal with people, you know, it their notional capacity, that they're not actually equipped to deal with people on trolleys as well.
Well, that's the point. But also, I think when, you know, now with COVID and with restrictions, you're talking about people who are very scared, who are coming into environments like this, who are on trolleys, they've got family members with them. You drop them at the door. It's a very, very terrifying experience. And that requires staff to be more available to reassure, to give, you know, as much information as they can. And because the volume is much greater, they have less time to do that. So, it's a really big problem. I mean, staffing is always a problem, particularly when we're recovering from policies that, you know, had moratoriums in place and we couldn't recruit, et cetera, et cetera. But when we also have additional patients on wards, I worry about examples I'm getting from nurses who are going on night duty, for example, in wards where they have additional patients on trolleys and their staffing complement is not what it should be to look after the base number. And that's a long night. That's a long 12-hour night.
I know, by the way, that you also have some concerns about HEPA filters, because it's not just in schools that that's an issue, that it's also one in hospitals. I'm afraid we actually don't have the time to get into it just at this minute. But we do have a text from someone who says that they work in a private hospital, perhaps the sort of private hospital that you would like the state to borrow some capacity from. And this person says, we're full. What do you want us to do? Put them in bunk beds? And I suppose, Phil, there is an issue there that sometimes we see private hospitals as an escape valve, but that they work to capacity as well.
Yeah, but I think if the country has hit the emergency that we're predicting, what I'm suggesting is that all hospitals are dealing with the emergency. That should be our focus, because the public hospital simply will not have capacity. So this is about pre-planning as much as you can with a pandemic like this. But we know we have the projections. We know what Professor Philip Nolan is saying in respect of the modelling. And there's no point just listening to that. We have to actually use it to plan to avoid a catastrophe. That's the point.
Finlay Hay, General Secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation, thank you very much for talking to us this lunchtime, and happy Christmas to you and your members if we don't get a chance to speak to you again before then. Very much appreciate you coming on this lunchtime.
On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.